Hello, everybody. This is Flares and Films. This week, we're talking about Muppet Treasure Island.
Hit the music!
Hey, everybody. My name's Michael Flaherty.
And my name is Colleen Flaherty. This is Flares on Films, a podcast where we talk about movies that we all love.
That's right. And what are we talking about this week?
Muppet Treasure Island. Michael, do you want to read possibly the very worst IMDb description of a movie we have ever come across in the entirety of this podcast?
All right, buckle up. So this is going to be a full description of the Muppet Treasure Island from 1996. Here we go. This is provided to us by IMDb. Here we go. The Muppets twist on the classic tale.
End.
I feel like I know. It's pretty good. I don't think that's bad. I mean, we know what the Treasure Island is, so.
Do we? Because I've been wondering about this because I've never read Treasure Island. I've seen this film and Treasure Planet, but I don't really remember that film. So I'm wondering, because I remember when we did Christmas Carol, and one of the things was like, wow, it's so close to the book. And with this one, I have not read Treasure Island, but there is no way that can be true.
Pop quiz. Who's the author?
John Lewis Stevenson.
John Lewis. I thought I would know, but it actually does not sound familiar to me, but whatever.
I also want to, can I start this podcast with an apology?
Oh, yeah.
As I often do.
Oh, yeah.
In our chatting about Muppets, I just got excited and wanted to do this movie. But as friend of the pod, Michelle said, maybe you should have spread out the joy a little bit. Maybe it was too soon to do a second Muppet movie, and that was my bad. So sorry to the listeners to do Muppets back to back.
Can I counter? I love that we're doing this movie now because you and I, and John, I believe, have a pretty big history with this movie where we really like it a lot. I, in particular, I really enjoy this film, and I think I realize that, or I believe in the culture of movie-liking people, people kind of associate Muppet Christmas Carol with being the good one of these two movies, and they're kind of similar. And I always thought, no way, this movie's way better. It's got all the jokes. It's got Tim Curry. Come on. And I even read, I know it's your job, but I even kind of read one review of this movie by Roger Ebert, who said, this movie, it's kind of like Christmas Carol, and it's got Muppets, not as witty, so it's near miss, not as good. And I was like, what? Come on. But watching this time, I kind of get it. And I have that perspective because we watched them back to back.
I mean, I have a problem where this is one of these movies I've seen so many times. I cannot possibly have an objective reading of it.
Yeah.
We'll get more into like how we actually feel about it. But I have to say one thing about this movie is that some of its silliness, not even jokes, you couldn't call them jokes. Some of the silliness still makes me laugh, even though if I read it on paper, it should not make me laugh.
Yeah. There's some misses, you know?
There's some bad jokes. Yeah. But there are some jokes that, like, if I read them, I'm like, that's really dumb, and it makes me laugh. Just as an example, because this is not important to the plot at all, so we might not bring it up. Rizzo does this bit where he sells cruise tickets. And it's not, I mean, it's kind of a hammy joke. But these rats with their queen's accents makes me laugh every time. Oh, that floor show's so exotic. It's not even a joke. But my favorite is when they're doing the tour guide, like, and this is the real jungle location for Muppet Treasure Island. And I'm like, not a joke. Still makes me laugh.
Oh, it's a joke. It's a meta joke. Dude.
It's not a like setup punchline classic. And it's also like so dumb.
Remember when the rats come in and they go, margaritas at the midnight buffet? How much? It's a great joke, but how much do you want a margarita at a midnight buffet? Just those two.
I don't want to stay up till midnight.
Okay. How much do you want a margarita at a 4 p.m. buffet?
so much. I'm 80 years old. I want an unlimited shrimp buffet with my margaritas.
Hell yeah. On a pirate ship. How great would that be?
Oh my God. On a pirate themed cruise. I am so old. You know what sucks about this pandemic is it's made me realize that cruises are terrible and no one should ever go on them. But
yeah, that was true before, right?
I know, but I didn't realize how bad they were. But I love planned activities in a small space with lots of unlimited booze. Like, it's an ideal vacation for me, but I just, now I can't ever do it.
Is there one that's explicitly pirate themed? Like, it's the whole ship is like a creaky ship and there's ghosts.
You know
what's
the weird thing? Like, you can pretty much go on any kind of theme cruise you could think of. Like, any fandom you have, they have a cruise ship.
Robots. Robot cruise.
Damn it. Let me check.
Okay, we'll both Google it while we do our next segment. Bam, time for Sam.
Sam, this is the part of the show where Sam comes up. Oh my God, sorry. Nope. I gotta tell you that the first Google hit is robot bartender shake things up at sea. And that is a sponsored post by Royal Caribbean.
Oh, that's not really a theme, though. That's just...
It is not a theme, but now they have a bionic bar at their Caribbean cruises. So anyway, this is the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some cool facts that are not related to robot-themed cruises, which may not exist. Sam, take it away.
After the success of the Muppet Christmas Carol, the Muppet team decided to do another period piece. They narrowed their choices down to two, King Arthur... and the winner, Treasure Island. According to director Brian Henson, quote, Christmas Carol was a genre classic tale, but we wanted this one to be a lot funnier, more absurd, and a lot more action. Treasure Island is where we ended up, but it's not a very faithful adaptation. We really twisted the story in order to make it funnier. There's a lot of action and intrigue on the high seas, and it works tremendously well.
I would have liked to see King Arthur.
I prefer this, though.
I know, but a quest would be a good Muppet.
It's weird that they had one success, Christmas Carol. They had one failure, which is this. I don't even know if it was a failure, but one less success. It's weird that they would give up just after that. Like, it seems like they could still do one.
I think they're very expensive productions.
Oh, yeah.
And they take a lot of
money.
Yeah,
but the next one was like Gonzo in Space or something like that.
Muppets in Space, I think, preceded this, didn't it?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, that was probably a lot cheaper, but I mean, are they making money off that?
I guess more money than doing these elaborate set pieces, probably. Yeah, and getting fucking Tim Curry and Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
In the first draft, the character of Jim Hawkins was going to be split into two characters. So Gonzo and Rizzo would play Jim and Hawkins. But according to Henson, quote, it never really worked because ultimately Treasure Island is a story about a boy becoming a man, kind of hard to do with a rat and a whatever. So the role of Hawkins would be found in the first teenager to actually audition, Kevin Bishop. As Bishop was a teenager, he obviously had some fun symptoms of puberty going, including his voice changing. So when it came time to record something better, he couldn't hit the notes without his voice cracking. So they had to improvise, and the recording of the song you hear in the film is actually his audition.
Aww.
I think I know all these facts, because I am a nerd of this movie.
No, here's why, Michael. We own the DVD that had this behind the scenes thing.
Like I said, we're nerds of this movie. I mean, that's the same thing.
I remember this from the little bit, and like Gonzo and Rizzo were in a little theater and they were doing the introduction bits, and the writers were surprisingly boring and unanimated. Anyway, go on.
Why do you think they became puppeteers? Why do you think they're not actors?
For the role of Long John Silver, Henson turned to a massive Muppet fan. Tim Curry loved the Muppets and has stated ever since that not only was Long John Silver his favorite role, but Treasure Island was his favorite film.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why. I love people who love Muppets.
I 100% agree.
I don't know why. I think it's totally legitimate not to like the Muppets, but I just find it an endearing character trait to like Muppets.
After shooting,
can I interrupt
Curry
for 1 second? I don't think there are themed cruises because I couldn't find a cowboy or western themed cruise either.
What?
Isn't there like a Backstreet Boy themed cruise?
Wait,
though?
What?
Yeah, and like the Backstreet Boys come with you, and then they do like concerts.
Backstreet. Yeah.
Because I know you can do like a Star Wars one and a Star Trek one and like pretty much every of all of your favorite TV shows.
Is it a themed cruise of Star Wars or there just is one R2-D2 on a boat?
Unclear. Yeah. I've never been on one of these, so...
Star Wars at Sea. Okay, yeah. Okay.
They exist.
Okay. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
So after shooting Wrapped, Curry was gifted with a Muppet made in the likeness of him as Long John Silver.
Oh, that's awesome. Have we ever seen him?
I didn't see it, no.
Oh, okay.
So it took over for... Sorry, go ahead.
Saying Muppets are to make.
Muppets are. It took over 400 Muppets to create the world of Treasure Island, including one very special one. We talked a bit last week about the passing of Muppet creator Jim Henson. Your question of the week is, which Muppet was considered to be the closest to Jim's personality?
I don't know what Jim Henson's like. I guess he's like a silly, but I always imagine he's just like Kermit. But I have no idea what he's like.
I want to say Sam the Eagle.
Wait, is it a new Muppet just for this movie that they made?
No.
Oh, it's just... Okay, so Kermit.
Okay, so the actual answer is Ralph the Dog. According to Brian Henson, Kermit was my father's best-known character, but a lot of people think he was more like Ralph in real life, except he couldn't play the piano well.
That's the only personality trait I know of Ralph the Dog.
He's supposed to be pretty laid back, but a little sarcastic, I guess. But anyways, after Henson passed away, the Muppet Ralph was actually basically retired.
Oh.
From what I read, he actually was somewhat considered to be the most famous, too, because he actually had a role on a TV show with James Dean or something, like his talk show. So
was
he
like
actually...
Paul Schaefer of his talk show?
I have no idea. I didn't look into it more. But basically, we all think of Kermit as the most famous, but it does seem like at least Ralph was the like original Muppet.
And was Ralph one of the Muppet babies?
He was.
Yeah, so there you go.
And so anyways, he was considered... So after Jim Henson passed, it was like this weird thing. Like no one really wanted to take on this character, and they kind of just... felt like, you know, we need to give it time. So you can spot him in this movie in the first scene in the tavern, but he wouldn't talk again until the second episode of Muppets Tonight, where he only says one line, but it was with the help of his new puppeteer, Bill Beretta. So
Michael or Sam, you can look in the link I put in the chat.
I'm looking at it now. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I found the pirate image. I'll put it up on the Facebook for your listeners.
Hell yeah.
Now I'm playing around. I'll look at that later. Okay. Speaking of talented puppeteers, Frank Oz, who originated Fozzie Bear, Miss Piggy, and many other memorable Muppets, wasn't available for filming. So Elmo puppeteer Kevin Clash would handle the physical movements of all of Oz's puppets, and then Oz came in later to supply their voices. Hmm. Apparently, he gave him like hints of like how to play the characters, and I think I read that he said Miss Piggy should be played as a truck driver who wants to be a woman or something, which is a little
okay. Aren't there women truck drivers?
Yeah, it's a little weird. So to create the world of Treasure Island, 7 very large stages were created, including indoor boat sets. Underneath the boats was a custom rig to simulate the motion of the ocean. Henson was nervous that while filming, the cast would become seasick. So before shooting this first scene, he made everyone take anti-nausea pills. The medication actually ended up making everyone incredibly drowsy. According to Henson, quote, no one could stay awake, including Tim Curry. I remember he looked at me at one point and said, I'm going to kill you. They had to take a break and allow the effects of the medication to wear off before continuing the day.
Damn, that's funny.
I just want everyone to know that you can go on a knitting cruise, a cat cruise, or you can go on a cruise all themed on the band Train, which I only know from their 90s hit Drops of Jupiter.
Okay, so that's something.
Those are weird.
But not a cowboy.
Sure,
cruise.
That just makes me feel like there is a world of weird themed.
Yeah.
And a ghost one.
Okay, now we're talking.
How can you have a ghost one? You're moving. Like, aren't ghosts more stationary?
Ghosts move all the time.
Ghosts love boats. I know that.
Ghosts, like, haunt, like, a house. Like, they don't haunt a car that moves.
Ghosts don't haunt cars.
So, I guess, to be fair, you go to haunted stops on the cruise.
Okay, but there aren't any cars involved, because ghosts do not haunt cars.
You absolutely have haunted boats! That's a thing!
So do they wait until there's, like, a murder on a boat, and then that's the boat that gets to be the haunted boat?
Maybe they just take out some old boats, and they're like, this is super haunted. I don't know.
I hate to assume that they're just throwing the word haunted around without any real ghosts.
The quilting one is called Quilt Till You Quit, which is not really a pun.
Cool. I'll tell you, don't want to. Right. They didn't change any words to make that.
Okay. Sorry, Sam. Michael, you're going to have a fun time editing this.
Yeah.
To create his iconic pirate style, Curry would rely on mimicking actually how his grandfather spoke. He said that his grandfather talked exactly like he does in the film.
Of course. Aww. Of course he does.
He also was supposed to have a peg leg, but it was too uncomfortable for him, so he literally just bent his leg up, and then they would green screen it out, kind of, and then use a crutch.
Yeah, according to Lieutenant Dan, if you will.
According to Curry, quote, Michael Caine said that the great thing about doing the Muppets is that you get to wear your own shoes. They tend to be shot shoulder height, and your feet are rarely appear on screen. This made hopping around on one leg a lot easier. Actually, by the end of the film, I quite liked being a uniped.
Aww.
Never heard the term uniped.
I know. I thought that was very nice. So this is also an interesting. I am intrigued to hear about your guys' thoughts on the music.
The original track is great.
It is. He just does the instrumental score. He doesn't write the songs.
Yes,
I know.
Oh, okay.
So the original songs.
Let's go ahead.
The original songs were created by a husband and wife team of Barry Mann and Cynthia Whale. And they had written songs for a bunch of people, including the 1964 hit You've Lost That Loving Feeling.
Oh, I don't know that one. Sing it.
You do.
Sing it.
That loving feeling.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Whoa. Yeah, John knows it.
So I was intrigued by this. I read somewhere that it was kind of like a really famous song for some. So I looked into it. In 1999, the Broadcast Music Institute ranked the song as the most played song on American radio and television in the 20th century.
I only know from Top Gun, where they do that bit.
That's why I was surprised by that.
Yeah, they all sing with her, and that's how John met his wife. That's why I made that John reference. Okay, sorry. I just wanted that to make sense for listeners.
Gotcha.
Also, apparently, it was the most played song for 22 years until 2019, when it was overtaken by Every Breath You Take.
What?
I know.
But now that's that weird. It's now that it's been featured on this podcast, maybe that'll
we gave it a
buck. Come back. Yeah. It'll come back.
By the way, that songwriting team, Whale and Man, sounds like a great name for a seaside pub. Go on.
Oh, it does. I would totally go there. So
again, not really a pun though. It's just like Whale and Man.
But what if it were a Moby Dick themed pub? Then Whale and Man would actually
does
be
Man
a
have
pun.
Two N's in it? Because that makes it a lot better for me.
Yes.
Okay, that's good then. I approve.
I feel like in a Moby Dick pub, you would have to have like a drink challenge or like a food challenge like they sometimes do that is like the Moby Dick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you have to conquer it.
Sounds dirty. Go on.
No, restaurants have that all the time.
They call it the Moby Dick?
No, they just have like food challenges.
Oh, sure.
Like eat this many hot wings.
Yeah. They sure do that.
So Muppet Treasure Island would open on February 16th, 1966, and it would earn $7.9 million over the weekend.
1996.
Sorry, 1996. It would be the third in the box office behind Broken Arrow and Happy Gilmore. So it actually did pretty well.
I thought the conventional wisdom was this did so poorly, they stopped doing these movies.
From everything I read, it did fine.
Oh. Well, what the hell, Muppets? Do more charming.
Yeah, spend the money.
My final fact for you guys today.
I have so many questions. This can't be the final fact.
This is the final fact of the day. Is that there is a character in this film, a warthog character, named Spam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hormel Foods Corporation, who creates Spam, actually sued the Henson production company because they felt like it was degrading to their product because the character of Spam is not a good character. They would lose this case, obviously, but my favorite is that the judge in this case is quoted as saying, "One might think Hormel would welcome the association with a genuine source of pork."
Before you go, I have a Wikipedia article up here. Phantom vehicle. So some people see like cars that have no driver, and that's like a haunted car.
But like the car itself isn't haunted. Like there isn't like a car that like ghosts are hanging in.
No, see, it's just it's a person in a blanket, and Scooby-Doo is going to find that out.
Sam, you and I listened to a podcast where they talked about how taxi drivers in Japan would pick up like people and take their homes, but then they were ghosts.
See, they're on the move.
So they get in the cars, but I'm saying like the car itself isn't haunted with people in it.
It's haunted at the time there is a ghost in it. If there is a ghost, it might be a temporary haunting, but it happened.
I would argue that the spot that the ghost was found in and the spot that the ghost was dropped off in are the haunted areas. The in-between is not the haunted area.
I would argue that was a great segment. Now let's go on to their next bit, which is Critics Corner.
Yeah, sorry to say, friend of the podcast, Peter Bradshaw, did not review this for whatever reason.
Wow, what the hell?
But I'll start out. And I want to start out, I think this is going to be a fun discussion point. Gina Davis and Rennie Harlan couldn't cut it with Cutthroat Island. Steven Spielberg nearly got the hook for Hook. But leave it to Miss Piggy and Kermit to discover uncharted gold in the shipwrecked pirate genre, says Susan something super unpronounceable from USA Today. Now, this is interesting, Michael. You and I both watched a YouTube video about how in the pre-Pirates of the Caribbean era, it was sort of people keep trying to make pirate movies a thing, and they're just never successful.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that video you're talking about. So is your question, like, is this better than Hook, or what's the question?
What was that? I don't know. We'll just have a discussion. Really? Well, we'll circle back to that. Sure. But Cutthroat Island was this huge production that lost a ton of money, a Waterworld-type situation, where they thought, like, they've tried to make pirates a thing, and it wasn't until Pirates of the Caribbean where it really, they could actually make money from the genre.
Sounds good. I mean, but even Pirates of the Caribbean was a fluke. I mean, they don't make pirate movies every year. Like, I feel like a zombie movie comes out every year.
That's a good point.
But I don't feel like a pirate movie comes out every year.
Because it was weird Hollywood conventional wisdom that you couldn't make successful pirate movies. And then since Pirates, can you name another one?
No, I cannot.
Exactly. It's hard to make a pirate movie.
Here's a review by David. And this is actually just a review on Amazon.com. So not even a real review. I absolutely loved The Muppets growing up, but I cannot love this movie. The crazy critters danced on screen, singing about pirates. Well, yeah. Looking for treasure. Yeah, that's the film. And cracking the same jokes you've heard 100 times before. The movie just didn't have the charm of the others. And it's sad to see what the Muppet franchise has become without Jim Henson. Here's the point I want to make, that I feel like these Muppet movies range on a spectrum from being really just kind of silly and from being like, aw, charming, oh, heartfelt, nice times. And that's a lot more Christmas Carol, and this one's a lot more silly. I feel like just the Muppets are not successful when they try to be silly, but I like it when they're silly.
I don't agree with you. I think that because a lot of the criticism of the movie is like, it's not Muppety enough. It's like, actual good Muppet movies are sillier.
That's what people say. Here's that I know three movies that are Muppet movies that people like. the original Muppet movie from the 70s, right? Muppet Christmas Carol, and then the new one that I think came out like 2009 by Jason Segel.
Which I don't think it's very good.
Those are all like, oh, the Muppets are so good. Actually, I don't remember the one from the 70s. This is just what I think. But then both, so the Muppet movie from 2009 also had a sequel that is a lot sillier and a lot less heartfelt. That's just a lot more jokes. And everyone hated that movie. And it's just like this movie. It's just like silliness and not like so sweet.
Okay, see, now I want to see that movie. Because what I really hated about the new Muppets movie is it really is just like, it's just fan service. It's like, remember the Muppets?
Right.
How about this?
And I feel like that's what people want. Whereas, like, when they just do silly, dumb jokes, people are like, oh, that's too dumb.
And I don't like it. To be clear, at the end of the movie, when they all sing Rainbow Connection together, I cried in the movie theater. But that's not a basis for a good film.
I remember in the sequel to that movie, Samuel Ayer was an FBI agent, and the dad from Modern Family was like a also secret agent from another country, and they were competing, and they would enter the scene with like badges, and in each scene their badges would like be progressively bigger because they were like trying to show off to each other, and it'd be like his whole body was the badge.
That's a good gag. I like that. I'm gonna watch this movie.
I might have made that up.
Muppets Most Wanted,
something right? Like that. Yeah,
okay. Next review from Fred Topel at about.com, which was a thing in the early 2000s. Just trust me. Disappointing Muppet movie. Too much Treasure Island. Not enough Muppets.
That's a weird review. I don't think
there are a lot of Muppets.
There's a lot of Muppets. I mean, I don't know. Also, I like when it's Muppets, but it is also too much Treasure Island. Like when it's so dark. Like that's kind of one of my favorite bits. All right, so this is by Sherry, who's an Amazon reviewer. I purchased the Muppet Treasure Island video for our grandkids to watch during our annual family summer camp. The theme this year was water. Okay, and thought this would fit right in. We did not like the movie. Dark on many levels. Okay, I see. I agree with that.
See, now I have some questions.
Yeah.
How was your family outing themed water?
And was the next year's fire?
Do you just go through elemental?
This
like,
is
like, what is your fear? Like,
this is the wind reunion. Bring your kites.
What's the second thing for wind?
More kites, bigger kites. It was a sword. It was a 2-day thing. Yeah.
And then there's like no wind, so you can't even kite.
Right. Go sailing.
So I actually didn't include, there weren't a lot of one-star reviews. This is very highly reviewed on Amazon because I guess they kept in all the songs, which was the problem with Muppet Christmas Carol. Yeah, it's pretty dark. I tried to watch this with my daughter and she got very scared at the very beginning and did not want to watch anymore.
And she's 2 and a bit.
She's almost 3, right? And now I shouldn't be watching these kind of things. But she said something like, I had to explain to my 4-year-old granddaughter what rum was. I'm like, that's kind of fair for a G-rated film, which it was.
Wait, are you saying G-rated films should not have rum?
I'm saying maybe a PG for that. There's a lot of murder in the film.
Murder, I'll say, sure. That's not G-rated. Murder's bad. But just rum?
I don't know. I'm not a raider of things.
You're a parent.
I don't think that's a crazy. Yeah. I mean, my 2-year-old also says that's mummy's wine. So yeah. Right. She knows what these things are. So I guess I'm a terrible parent.
But it's not. It's not like if you're making a Muppet movie about pirates, you have to have rum. So it's like blame the association that gave it a G rating.
So they don't just talk about rum. I mean, they have to
rum lads need the rum. I got the horrors. Oh yeah.
Give me rum till I float.
Rum till I float. I mean, that's like what people have rum, they do that. You can have that conversation with your child.
There's also a song lyric in the beginning that they had to drown their souls in rum.
Oh, I thought it was drown their sins in rum.
Yep. That's not better.
Yeah, same idea.
Anyway. Oh, this is from Gregory Weinkopf. This is an international reviewer from Übersine. There's a gaping hole with Jim gone. However, his son directs with great energy, and it's almost impossible not to like Tim Curry and a bunch of Muppets on a reasonably literary pirate ship.
What? Okay. So this last one's by Joseph, who this is just an Amazon. Honestly, we just got this from Amazon. Problem, unlike the TV show and the first few Muppet movies, this film has way, way too little Muppets and a pretty bad story, too. Fie on Disney for this slop. No ale for them.
There were a lot of Muppets in this.
There's a lot of Muppets. There's a whole... Ugh.
I would call this 95% Muppets.
It's a pretty for a Muppet movie, this is pretty Muppet.
I would also say Tim Curry has a pretty Muppety energy.
He's like the most energetic one of everyone. He's the one like, out of every character, it's like, oh yeah, that's the cartoon. Wait, really? Right. He's real?
Like Kermit is a subdued moral captain.
Yeah.
That's the raging volcano.
That's a quote from the film.
So this is a very sparse plot summary. So Michael, you're just going to have to remember bits.
All right.
So I'll start. Oh, so the opening, by the way, is the great Hans Zimmer score, which I like very much. And the song, you know, Shiver My Timbers. And then it's sort of all these pirates burying treasure. And then a bunch of murders happen.
So we can assume that's probably from the book, that there's some kind of treasure somewhere that they have to go look.
Right. So, and then we cut to a pub, and Jim Hawkins and his close friends, Gonzo and Rizzo, they're all orphans who work at the Admiral Benbow Inn under the ownership of Mrs. Bloveridge, played by Jennifer Coolidge. She's great. And she hears a lot of things. That's a dumb joke. I didn't care for that joke.
What's that?
How does she do that?
Yeah.
She
can don't like it. Things. Don't like it.
Not a great joke.
Nope. Not good. Yeah, you know, so I like this movie and I feel like I like the jokes. One of the things I think this movie does better than Christmas Carol, or just something that I personally like about it, is with Christmas Carol, I feel like you go from scene to scene. It's like, this is the scene where Kermit is fun. This is the scene where Sam the Arrow is fun. This is the scene where Fozzie Bear is fun. I like that they're all together all the time. Like, and I just like the ship. That's why the opening is like, eh, okay, let's get this going. Because once they're on the ship, everything's so fun.
I agree with that. I like that.
So
this is why you would like the King Arthur tale less, because I was like, oh, it seems like a quest, but then the quest would be meeting various Muppets and not being all together.
Yeah, it's fun how everybody's on the ship.
I like. Okay.
Here's another discussion point. This is our first song right here. How do you feel about the music of the movie? Obviously, like they're open. Oh yeah, the opening is great.
I like all the songs, yeah. Except for one.
Yeah, except for that love song. But it's weird because we were not big fans of the music of Christmas Carol, but they don't sound that dissimilar. Like, I feel like they could be written by the same people.
But I'm singing these songs.
Right. And I don't know if that's nostalgia, though, or if it is a difference of quality.
Christmas Carol, I have a lot of nostalgic feelings about. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I don't think we talked about this in the last pod about how I do kind of love how the Muppets there's a conceit that the thing about all their songs is they're not very good singers, and I like that. Like, they're not bad singers, but they're just like,
yeah, that's true,
normal people. They're not great.
But I like this song who is sung mostly by the human male lead, and he has a very squeaky voice, also pretty cartoonish. You were saying the Muppets all kind of sound like they don't have great singing voices. Our main character doesn't have a great voice himself. You know, it's very like, I don't know. It's interesting, but it's still a good song.
I feel like he is somebody who is supposed to be a real singer.
Yeah.
It's just not for me. Whereas the Muppets are just.
Oh, my whole point.
Oh, sorry.
I think we're talking about two. You're saying it's cool that the Muppets have that voice. And my point is, it's cool that the song is good enough that even though the guy can't sing that well, it's the composing of the song is still good.
I agree with you, but I don't think they were going for that. Like, I think they were going for him being a good singer.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I just, I like Gonzo a lot. He was always my favorite.
Really? That's your favorite
one? Silly.
Yeah.
No, Sam the Eagle is my favorite, yeah. But
All right.
Where are we?
Also living in the inn is Billy Bones, who claims to be a former pirate and was the mate of legendary pirate Captain Flint. After Jim, Gonzo, and Rizzo sing about there's got to be something better, a mysterious blind pirate, Blind Pew, appears and gives Billy Bones a black spot.
Am I a bad person that whole bit makes me laugh? Like, it is offensive that the joke is that he's blind and French, but it kind of makes me laugh.
Which part makes you laugh?
The whole bit. He comes in and he's like, I am Blind Pew. I don't know why. It's not funny, but it is.
Yeah.
And then he like grabs Jim Hawkins like, a pretty little girl. And I don't know. It's so bad and so clumsy, but it makes me laugh.
It doesn't make me laugh when Gonzo or when Rizzo's like, oh, he's a blind fiend. And Gonzo's like, well, you like to call them a visually challenged fiend. But then it makes up for the joke when he's like, oh, I may be visually challenged, but I can tell you are lying.
The way he's a visually challenged. So good.
Like, okay, you like, are going to take this.
The joke is that he's French. Like, you know, that's the joke.
There's so many jokes like that where it's like, that's a bad joke, but I liked it. There's a joke where Billy Bones is in the bed. He goes, Jim, Jimmy, Jim. And then Gonzo goes, I'm not Jimmy, Jim, Jim. He's Jimmy, Jim, Jim. And then he reaches you over. And the joke's like, all right, I get it. Not that funny. But then when he goes, oh, Jim. Jim, Jimmy, Jim, Jim. The joke is so funny to me just because of the way it's shot, where it's like this really Dutch angle and he's like really sweaty and it's like he says it so seriously. You know what I'm talking about? It's like it's like it got too dumb that it got good.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I also remember from that same little video extra from the DVD that Sam was referencing that Billy Connolly is his name, right?
Yeah.
He comes on and he's like, I'm not going to do the accent.
Do it!
He said it was so hard doing that scene where he grabs Gonzo's nose because when he grabs the nose, his eyes go cross-eyed. And it took him like 2 hours to get it down because he couldn't stop laughing.
That's super
funny. At Gonzo's face.
Okay.
Anyway.
So Blind Pew comes and gives Billy the black spot. Billy explains all his stories were true and he must flee before his fellow crewmates come to kill him.
They don't explain that the black spot is a pirate's death sentence.
The pirate lore is cool. That it's a page torn from the Bible. I don't know. Yeah. It's neat. However, he instructs Jim to take the treasure map. It warns him of the one-legged man before suddenly dying of a heart attack. Pirates soon attack the inn and an explosion in the storeroom sets the inn on flames. But all the occupants escape. Jim gone to... Oh, you go ahead. So that's an example. That scene is probably like 10 minutes long. And I like the song, and I'm like, come on, get to it.
I just really like Billy Connolly's performance.
That's true. Oh. He's really good.
Rum to the float. I think that's the only thing I can do in his accent. Also, when they're unpacking his trunk, they have, you know what? Never mind. I can't remember.
Kissinger.
Yes, a Henry Kissinger novel, which is a very specific dated joke from the mid-90s. Anyway.
Diplomacy, I think. Yeah.
Yes. Jim, Gonzo, and Rizzo arrive in Portsmouth, where they seek out Squire Trelawney, who examines the treasure map. I'm sorry. This is also a bit where it's not that funny, but they go to the door, and he goes, Squire Trelawney's not here. He will be back on the Feast of St. Lulu. But his half-wit's son is here.
That's, again, pretty dumb, but he's like... So he just hams it up so much. But his half-wit son is here. And then they take it. He's like, oh, great. We'll see him.
And then they go. And a joke that's not funny on paper, where Fozzie has a little man in his finger. Oh, Mr. Bimbo. He's been to the moon. Oh, I'm sorry. What was that? Oh, twice. Excuse me.
That must be a reference or something, because it's so unusual.
It's weird. Well, I do think in the book, that's how they get their it financed, that it's the half-wit son. But then he does have a line. They're like, you're really going to finance all this? It's like, of course. What are half-wit sons for?
That's good.
The ocean? Ocean? Again. Oh, God. Not a good joke.
Jim and his friend. Oh, wait. Did we do the whole paragraph?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so they go.
They have a ship. It's called the Hispaniola. And by the way, the set in like where Portsmouth looks great.
It's a great looking film. You know, even if you watch this film on mute, you know, it's just so fun to look at.
Very well done.
Jim and his friends. Here we go. The star of our movie is here. Jim and his friends meet the cook, Long John Silver.
Michael, can you describe how we first meet Long John Silver?
If you're referring to some particular,
where they go down into the bow of the ship and he's singing Drunken Sailor, mm-hmm. and they're like, excuse me. And he goes, stowaways. On this ship, we barbecue shish kebab stowaways. And then he takes out a knife and then he does that famous Tim Curry.
It's so good. Who is like Tim Curry? Is no there anyone one. In the world that's no like him? It's not like, oh, we need a Tim Curry like. Well, then you're going to do a different movie then because you don't have one.
We meet Long John and then the first mate, Mr. Arrow, who's Sam the Eagle, and then Captain Smollett. And you could, I'm reading your bit.
Yeah.
But you can describe the Captain Smollett bit.
This is not a good bit because it goes on for so long, but they're like, the captain approaches. And then there's like this dark, haunting music. And then you see these black horses carry this black carriage and all the steam. And it's like all scary and spooky. And then it comes out, the carriage comes. And then this man, he's like angry man, walks out. He dips his hat aside and steps aside for Kermit, who is the captain. He goes, hello, everyone. And it's very cute.
Hello, everybody.
That's the raging volcano. See, that was a reference to that.
And then we do Sailing for Adventure, which is a delightful song. I actually like that song.
I like all the songs. So it's very singable. Props to this joke, though. when they're just all singing about how much they like to sail in the ocean, and then we are introduced to our three villains. What's the bit they do?
Yeah. I like them watch to cry as they walk the plank.
I prefer to cut a throat. Like to watch them into a... you do it.
I like to hang them high and watch their little feet try to walk in midair as their faces turn blue.
It's a good life on a boat. This is this episode. We're just going to sing the whole songs.
Yeah.
So this is just a fun part of the movie when they're all sailing. I feel like this section of the movie is like 20 minutes long, but this is my favorite bit.
So my second favorite song, and I feel bad for being so basic, but I fucking love Cabin Fever. I'm sorry. It makes no sense.
Okay. Can I say this? I was like, man, I love this movie. Is it good? I don't even know. The cabin fever scene, this is a 10 out of 10. This is perfection.
The way they start it, where they're like, we just haven't had a breeze. Oh, I've got the madness. And then some guy gets up and wiggles his arms and goes, I've got cabin fever. And another guy, I've got it too.
I got cabin fever. I've got it too.
Well, you know what's weird about this movie? There's a weird lack of background music.
So
people have seen it and you'll just be like, people will just be talking, and there will, if you catch up on that, there will feel like a lack of energy. But Cabin Fever, that whole scene, there's just so much energy. It's just like a perfectly put together piece of cinema.
It's very Muppety also.
I mean, but I love it too, because it could be completely taken out of the film. It is just like they put in this little play in the middle of the movie for no reason.
This one proud vessel has become a floating psycho ward.
Sorry, you can't take it out, because then the next scene, they go, hey, what was that song just now? What are you talking about? You know, Cabin Fever. Ah.
Right, then the movie would make no sense.
Yeah, so, okay. You have to have it done.
Okay. So the three are villains. They kidnap Rizzo and Gonzo. Another line I found very funny where... Wait. Never mind. Hang on. That's a bit later. So they kidnap Rizzo and Gonzo, and they're going to torture them to tell them where the map is. Did we miss something?
Yeah, we missed a lot. Here's a scene that we missed. Because we missed basically the introduction of Jim Hawkins and Long John bonding. So there was a scene where they're out at the helm of the boat, you know, and they're like, oh, look at the stars. Oh, don't use your compass. Look at Polaris, you know, and they're bonding. So I guess a point against this film is our main character is so lame. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't really have a reason for being in the film.
But that's the point. Because the point is they didn't want Rizzo and Gonzo to be the main character because you're supposed to feel for Jim. But to be honest, I find Jim kind of an accessory to Long John Silver's emotional journey, which I actually am invested in. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's not really that big of a flaw because, like, you got Long John. Like, I don't really need much else. But there's...
I do feel for their relationship only because of Tim Curry's performance.
Right. But you feel like, yeah, the reason why Tim Curry likes Jim Hawkins is because he sees something in him or he wants something from him. It's like, you don't even really think about Jim Hawkins, really.
I love his moral ambiguity as a character. I think it's actually...
You're talking about Long John.
Yeah. I think it's very, very well
executed. I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah.
We're just agreeing.
we just love Long John. But it is interesting to me because if you look at this movie and Christmas Carol, obviously this is Tim Curry's movie where that's Michael Caine's movie. And I feel like the average person would be like, well, obviously Caine is the better one because he's, you know, much more serious. He is funny, but also heartfelt. He took it a lot more seriously. This is a lot more campy, kind of goofy.
Yeah. But I mean, Michael Caine would do that performance in a straight Christmas Carol movie. But Tim Curry would not do this performance in a Treasure Island film.
Right.
That wasn't Muppety.
My only point was, if someone wanted to argue that Michael Caine's better, I'm not going to argue against him, but I do prefer this a lot more because it's just so fun.
It's so fun. Anyway, all right. So at one point, Rizzo and Gonzo are tortured in kind of a funny scene where Gonzo's like, do what you will. My friend and I will never tell. And Rizzo's like, well, maybe if they ask real nice.
No. Best joke is where they torture him and they torture Gonzo by stretching him out. And Gonzo's like, oh, I love this. I'm taller. I could be in the NBA. And then Rizzo's like, oh, no, don't torture me. I hate basketball. See, that's a joke.
That's a good joke. So so then at one point, Kermit's like, look, man, you have to give me the treasure map. I have to lock it away. Have we even made that a point that Jim has a treasure map and that's why we're all doing this? I feel like we're really not doing a great job.
No, we're too caught up. Oh, because ladies and gentlemen at home, the point of this film is that Tim Curry is good. Like, there's a story, but here's the point. Tim Curry's great and they sing Cabin Fever. If we've said that, then we've covered it so far.
Another scene I fucking love is how Long John Silver tricks Mr. Arrow, played by Sam Neill.
Yes.
You leave the book, he's like, so you know what the greatest...
But before you say, Samuel Arrow at this point has been like safety. This has been established, like, beforehand.
Unsafe lifeboat.
When Samuel Arrow comes into the torturing of Gonzo and Rizzo, he goes, why, this looks unsafe.
So yeah, at one point he's like, all right, well, what you need to do is test out the lifeboat. So he gets Samuel into, well, it looks good. It's like, well, you need to get into open water. Can I hold anything for you? Oh yes, my keys. That would be most unfortunate. So yeah, then the next scene is like, oh, Samuel Earl is gone, or sorry, Sam Beagle / Mr. Earl has gone overboard. Mm-hmm. Sad. And now Long John has the keys. And it turns out Long John was the bad guy the whole time, and they stole the map.
Man. Okay. So this paragraph here. Mm-hmm. So Jim and the others learn of this mutiny plan, but Jim is captured and taken with the pirates to Treasure Island. Is there?
And what happens then?
Smollett, Gonzo, and Rizzo.
No. The song.
Oh well, that's here. We'll get to it. Smollett, Gonzo, and Rizzo follow it, are soon captured by tribal wild boars who present them to their queen, Benjamina Gunn. I only recently learned that the character in the book is Ben Gunn, Benjamin Gunn. That's very recent that I learned that. Benjamina previously had a relationship with Smollett, but he left her at the altar.
And then apparently she took up with the pirate Flint, who buried the treasure, but also slept with Long John, who is in the same crew.
That's why I wouldn't suspect that this was made up for this movie, because that's like, you really think that'd be in the book, maybe, because it's so adulterous.
So let's talk about my favorite song.
Please.
I mean, Tim Curry. This is the first time I've watched this. I watched this film a lot, where I heard him say in the background the line, "All right, lads, show him you've been practicing."
That's just the point of this movie, right? Like, just Tim Curry's great. Yeah. Like, out of 10, I would rate this movie Tim Curry.
Upstage, lads! This is my only number.
That's the best line of the film.
Silver finds the formal barrier spot for the treasure, but when the other pirates attempt to kill him, he allows Jim to escape.
Because the treasure wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Which is weird that that didn't include that.
Jim rescues Gonzo and Rizzo while Silver and his pirates surprise Smollett and Benjamina.
But before that, they did this fucking weird scene where the pirates attempt to kill Long John, and then they tie him up and they present him with a black spot. He's like, "You dare put a black spot?" Again, this maybe is for the argument of it not being a kid's film. Mm-hmm. He goes, "You put it on a page from the Holy Bible? You heathenous monsters. Oh, Satan is heating his pokers." Like, what?
Cut that short, he Tim Curries it up.
So, honestly, I have not wanted you to put a clip until that moment, because he does this weird, like, revival preacher thing, but in a British accent. That's just phenomenal.
Is Benjamina a name?
Sure.
Are people named Benjamina?
Why not?
Benjamina reveals the treasure is in her chamber, but she and Smollett are tied upside down on a cliff face to fall to their demise. It's too bad that Miss Piggy's not good in this movie.
That is very
bad. I don't really like her in this film.
She's
cheated, because she was great in Christmas Carol. Fall to their demise when ropes are snapped by a pair of flame pits. The two reform their love for each other through song, "Love Let Us Hear." Is that kind of similar to the song we were talking about earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What song?
The radio hit.
What radio hit?
We talked about it for like an hour. The radio hit that this songwriting pair made.
No.
You lost that love and feeling.
Yeah, no, "Love Let Us Hear" is much worse.
Okay. And are saved from death by the other heroic crew members, including the alive Mr. Arrow.
I love when we find Mr. Arrow's alive. And he goes, "Gentlemen, join me in this exceptionally safe lifeboat."
The joke in the scene is he's still examining the safety of the lifeboat after like an hour of not seeing him. And then he goes, "By the way, I think Long John is untrustworthy."
Like, thanks. Great. I'm trying to think if Miss Piggy had any good moments.
Yeah, not really.
I don't know. I like it when Kermit's like, "Wait, you took up with Long John too?" It's like, I was a lady. He was a pirate. You know what it is.
A battle breaks out between the heroes and pirates on the shores of the island. Pirate Sweetums joining the heroes. Smollett takes on Silver, but loses his sword. Jim and the others gang up Silver.
I liked them sword fighting. I thought that was very cute and fun.
Yeah, that's good. Take us out.
That night, Silver locates Mr. O's keys in his pocket and manages to escape the ship with some treasure. It looks like a lot of treasure, by the way.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And then, honestly, so this is what's... Can we go back to the Professional Pirate song for a second? Because, so Jim is an orphan who is only really connected with Long John as a mentor. And in the song, he's making a point that, like, hey, man, it's all about perspective. Like, to some, Sir Francis Drake, he's a villain to the Spanish, but he's a hero to the British. Like, I don't understand why that's not more convincing to Jim. Like, Jim never even for a second is like, "Oh, yeah, I should totally be a pirate." Because, like, that would work on me, and I have a pretty emotionally secure upbringing. But, like, for this guy who's only ever connected with this one person as a father figure, he doesn't even think for a second.
That would have been I'm torn. So you're right, and that would have made Jim more interesting, but are you really going to spend the runtime on that?
No, I would not for this Muppet film.
Yeah.
It's just in the logic of the film, it doesn't make sense to me, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to see more Jim. I just want to see more Long John.
I mean, yeah, I love it. Long John's like, when they all go after him, it's like, Jim, get out of here. And then at the end, he's like, he's like pointing his gun at Jim because Jim's about to blow the whistle on him. And he takes the gun out. He's like, you know what, Jim? I'm never going to shoot you. I really care about you. Your father would be so proud of the man you've become. You're honest and true. And Jim allows him to leave. And I just thought that was such a poignant moment. But
can I
to
be
your
honest?
Point, Michael, it was only poignant on one side of that equation.
Right. I don't actually get why he doesn't blow the whistle.
I don't know. But Kermit says your father would be proud for
something. Here's who might know, our brother, in our next segment that
wait,
we...
Wait!
All right.
Because the end of it is... Mr. Arrow comes in and he goes, there's a life of us. They're like, yeah, we know. It's like, but I happen to know it was unsafe. And then the end is that Long John is
That's good writing. They set that up well.
Yeah, that was a fun callback. So now
let's go to the master himself, John Flaherty. Are you here? Can you tell us about this film?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Very great. Good. What do you think about this movie?
What movie were we talking about?
Muppet Treasure Island.
Right, the double Muppet hit. So I think I said this on the Christmas Carol episode, but Treasure Island has the consistent feel and energy that I want from a Muppet movie. And I'm rewatching. Yeah, it delivers on that. Okay. It's a more consistent movie. The songs are better throughout.
Yeah, the songs are better for sure.
Christmas Carol, it front loaded on the good songs. Treasure Island, I mean, Professional Pirates, not till like 2 minutes from the end.
Yeah, there's only the one stinker.
Yeah, and that's like a 3 second song anyway. So, as a Muppet movie, this just does so much better than Christmas Carol. I love it.
I think me and Colleen are in the same boat where the Muppets are not really what make the film.
No, obviously Tim Curry makes it. That's just a fact.
I love that, John. Already knew.
Both from the fact that Tim Curry himself is amazing and just is perfect for this role in every respect. Also, the character of Long John Silver is just infinitely more interesting to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I love me a conflicted villain with actual, like, that you can identify with because, like, he's got a moral quandary that's obvious and interesting and you buy into it. Jim is fine as like an anvil to his hammer. And I just love that character and I love me Tim Curry. And 1 + 1 = 20,000. It's great.
I like hammer to anvil. That's a good analogy.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, I can go on about Tim Curry, but you probably already have.
Yeah.
I like all the songs. Obviously, Professional Pirate is my best. Have you guys noted that Cabin Fever, while a great song, is utterly and completely pointless?
Yeah. We did.
I never really put that together until I rewatched it. I'm like, wait a second. That literally
doesn't advance the plot at all.
And left and had no role.
That's actually why I like it so much, because it's like a little just intermission from the movie.
It is exactly an intermission.
It was a long time ago that I read Treasure Island, but after we watched it last time, me and Michelle talked about it, we actually like went through the plot of the book Treasure Island. That movie is shockingly faithful.
Oh, really?
Whoa. Okay. Sam said this was not quite faithful. Like
it's not quite faithful at the very end.
And the native tribes, is that a thing? Or
well, I mean, not no, but you got to turn Ben Gunn into Benjamina. So what are you going to do?
Benjamina. It sounds dirty the way you're saying it.
But and Long John does get away for real in the book. He doesn't in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But yeah, I really, really enjoy this movie and watch it 1,000 times before I watch Christmas Carol again.
Yeah, it's our kind of film. It's a Flaherty film.
Yeah.
What grade do you give it?
Well, let's talk about flaws. What flaws would you say it has?
There's a lot. There's a few scenes without Tim Curry.
Yeah, and it's like you're paying the dues at the gym early on just to get Tim Curry.
Right, laying
like,
the runway.
Billy Connolly is all right. I mean, he's pretty funny, but he's only in there for like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So how much am I going to downgrade this for the time we have to spend at the gym? I think I'm going to go A minus.
All right.
And hey. I feel bad about the minus, but I'm going to stick with it.
All right, John, thank you so much for joining us this week on Flutters on Film.
Thank you so much.
All right, Michael, why is this a bad film?
You know, I was just thinking like it was so great before I saw it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pretend I'm watching this with somebody else. Because like when you watch a movie you love with somebody else who hasn't seen it, you know, sometimes it could like get real awkward when you're like,
yeah,
oh no,
I know exactly what
this isn't
about.
That good. And there's just like a couple of the opening scenes are like, all right, let's go. This isn't that funny. But I feel like I've loved this movie more just talking about it. Cause like,
okay, but that's not the bit we're doing right now.
Oh yeah. Shit. I was doing a review. Why does this suck? Because there are bad jokes. The writing is
jokes that are, both outdated, but probably weren't that great at the time.
Main character, kind of lame.
Yeah. Like when they're like, you don't know where the treasure is? Where'd you get that necklace of gold doubloons? Shopping Channel? You know, they're not all winners, those jokes.
Yeah, a couple of lame jokes, yeah.
And of course, that one song really drags.
Really? What a bad song. And yeah, they did bat poor with Miss Piggy.
Well, I also just think that...
The tribal, the tribe is not that good either, I don't think.
I do really like it when the rats sing. I love these flow shows. They're so exotic.
Well, that's good, obviously.
It's very funny.
Okay, we're on the bad. What's bad about it?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I think not only was the song not good, but I'm not invested in Kermit and Piggy's relationship.
Not at all.
As was set up. So no. It's like, it's weird we're taking this much time for a song in the first place. Forget if it's any good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, yeah. I don't know. Oh, you know what else a joke I didn't love this time? Where they do this whole thing where they do a roll call of everybody.
Yeah, that's the scene where I really noticed, huh, there's no background music. Because it just goes on for so long. And it's kind of silent. So it feels like there's no energy to the scene.
Right, like one of the jokes is that one of them has a very ugly name and it's a hot lady with a deep voice. And I'm like, that's not the best joke.
It was good when they're like, old Tom, here, dead Tom. There's just like a little skeleton that just waves. Bad, sorry, going bad.
So bad. Yeah.
Dead Tom's dead. You fool, dead Tom's always been dead. That's why he's called dead Tom.
That's a weird movie.
There's a guy on our team that's a pirate.
Anyway, why is this a good movie? Now you can go on with the bit you were doing.
Yeah, I very much like the role of Tim Curry. I was saying this. I feel like we've said a couple times that this was a awesome era of the Muppets, that they were doing these literary things. But this movie and Muppet Christmas Carol are, to me, unlike any other movie. I mean, what other movie is like this? This kind of big kind of Hollywood production.
With something so silly. Also.
Yeah. You know, it's not it. Like, oh, it's not. Who else did King Arthur? You know, if they didn't do the Muppet King Arthur, but who did the family friendly, cool King Arthur that's still funny?
Wishbone.
You know, in theaters, though.
Yeah, no. I feel like we haven't talked enough about how Sam the Eagle was so good.
Yeah.
Like, when Kermit comes on board and he goes, anyone caught dawdling will be shot on sight. He goes, I didn't say that. Sir, I was merely paraphrasing.
Yeah, can I set that joke up too? Kermit goes like, all right. And then he looks at the railing. Oh, a little dusty. Then he walks. And then Sam the Eagle goes, he's furious. You, 10 lashes, then you walk the plank. I didn't say that. I was anticipating your whim, sir.
So good.
So some good jokes. But You know what? And I really liked what Sam said all the way back at the beginning when they said, it sounds like they did what they wanted to do, which was, we want to do Christmas Carol, but sillier and more action. They did it. I mean, this is exactly that. I don't feel like they failed at all.
Oh, God, it's so fun. It's nice to have some fun times when you're watching a film.
Yeah. And they got Tim Curry, who is just unlike any other human, at his peak to do his thing.
Michael, if you could just edit many Tim Curry.
That's going to be the whole episode. Honestly, it might just be that in none of our voices.
Just cut out 40 minutes of us talking.
Yeah, there's no summary this week. It's just there's a bit in the video game Command & Conquer where Tim Curry says, I have to go to the one place not corrupted by capitalism, space! And I only bring that up so that I could put the clip in because what other opportunity am I going
to
get?
I'm escaping to the one place that hasn't been corrupted by capitalism. Space!
I feel like you're going to bring it up again on the
podcast. Probably. If we do Rocky Horror, it's coming back up.
Dude, that's a fucking... Anyway, what grade do you give it?
It's hard, because I get the flaws. If someone wants to tell me that Christmas Carol is better, I can't argue. I don't know. I'll give it a B+.
I'm going to agree with John, give it an A- because I enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
It's just personal enjoyment. I love it.
That's a great reason to grade it that great.
Anyway, but before we do that, who are we sponsored by this week?
Oh, we're sponsored by... who's a cruise ship company?
Caribbean.
Yeah, let's go to Caribbean Cruise. I bet they have some bands playing that we can go listen to. Buffets. Yeah. I feel like I would love a cruise. So what's bad about cruises?
We shouldn't talk about that because they're our sponsors.
What's great about cruises? Why are they so good?
Can you run from the law on a cruise? Yeah, I mean, you're in international waters, so probably not.
Well, probably, because you're in international waters.
You can listen to train.
But you can't do on land. Right. Try to do it on land and you will fail.
Jupiter in her hand. That's train.
That's a little sample. Wait, that's a good... I know that song. I like that song. You're saying I could listen to that, but on a boat.
Yeah, right, but no, it's like themed around being there to watch train.
How much is a cruise ticket?
You know what would be funny if it's like the whole cruise was actually like literally train themed? Like you go to the caboose car to get the hotel, but then it's like it's the dorkiest train theme on a boat, but then you see the band train. That's what I want to go to. That's
I like that a lot. And everyone there is
Carnival, I know you're listening because you're sponsoring us this week. And do it.
Everyone's there like, we could have just gone on a train. Why are we on a boat?
Because then you have a venue for listening to train.
You can listen to train on a train.
Could you?
People are double training.
Could you really set up? Anyway, we're doing this a bit too long.
Yeah, it's gone.
Carnival Cruises. It's a party. Thank you for joining us this week on Flares on Films. Next week, we will be doing Groundhog Day. Stay tuned for that trailer. I don't know if I've ever seen that movie start to finish.
And cut.
Time.
1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat.
Weatherman Phil Connors is spending the day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Phil? Ned Ryerson, I did the whistling belly button trick at the high school talent show.
Bing!
Bing!
But Phil's about to find out he's not just stuck in Punxsutawney.
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
Chance of departure today, 100%.
He's stuck.
It's Groundhog Day!
In Groundhog Day.
I'm reliving the same day over and over.
Phil?
Ned Ryerson?
Bang!
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen.
Well, it's Groundhog Day. Again?
At first, he was a little anxious.
Phil? What?
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
I'd say the chance of departure is 80%.
But now...
We could do whatever we want.
He's discovering the possibilities.
Don't you worry about cholesterol?
Why?
And living life like there's no tomorrow.
Phil Connors!
Ned!
Because there isn't.
I am an immortal. I have been stabbed, shot, burned, frozen, electrocuted. I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god. I'm not the god.
He's out of his gourd.
But to get what his heart wants most.
What are you looking for, Phil? A date for the weekend?
Means living this day over again till he gets it right.
Believe it or not, I studied 19th century French poetry.
What a waste of time.
I studied 19th century French poetry.
La fille qui j'aimerais.
You speak French?
Oui.
Bill Murray. Andy McDowell.
To the groundhog.
I always drink to world peace. Well, what should we drink to?
I like to say a prayer and drink to world peace.
Don't drive angry. Don't drive angry.
He might be okay.
Yes! Groundhog Day!
Life has a funny way of repeating itself.
What did you do today?
Oh, same old, same old.